You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
This is a story of the Bad River people and their home on Lake Superior.
Our people have been here for millennia.
They've had to fight for who they are.
And the Ojibwe have been resisting ever since.
That's from the trailer for the new documentary film Bad River, which follows the history of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. The movie premieres this weekend at theaters around the state and the country. I talked to two members of the Bad River Band yesterday to talk about the new documentary and what it means for the tribe. But first, I talked to the director of Bad River, filmmaker Mary Mazzio. And now, what is it that put the Bad River fight for sovereignty, the pipeline story, and so much more on your radar as a filmmaker?
So, honestly, I was called almost at the beginning of my career by a Native American high school basketball coach. And he could not get any of his high school athletes recruited to D1 schools. And he said to me at the time, could you ever do a project to help dispel some of those preconceived stereotypes? And I was very young in my career. But after our last film, I said, now I think is the time. And subsequently, I was introduced to former chairman Mike Wiggins. And he invited me to the Bad River Reservation and said, why don't you come out and do some, we're going to do some canoe diplomacy. I had no idea what that meant, but I went out and, it started from there.
And then you started, I think, telling the story of the pipeline. But as you were filming and talking to people, it grew into a lot more in this very much bigger story.
Exactly. I mean, I thought here you have this small group of people with monumental effort and a great personal cost, fighting to protect a precious resource, Lake Superior, not for themselves, but for all of us. And as a recovering lawyer, I was really drawn into that sort of initial conflict. And when I started interviewing elders, they were happy to talk about the conflict, but they said, wait. Do you realize what happened 7 years ago with the mining battle and the open pit mine that was going to be put in the Pinokies? And oh, by the way, we want to talk about what our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents have done over the course of history to fight back. And so this turned into a historical retrospective because that's really what the elders wanted to talk about, and they controlled the flow of the film.
Can you talk about how you tell that story? You're juggling a lot of voices from the Bad River Band themselves and your narrators. How did you put all these pieces together?
I'll tell you, I had an amazing partner in Allison Abner. Allison wrote for Narcos and West Wing. She happens to be the descendant of the Stockbridge Muncie Band. I also had another writing partner in Alec Sokolow. Alec wrote Toy Story. So you rightly point out that you've got the historical angle, you've got the current lawsuit. We have amazing narration by Quanah Chasing Horse and three-time Academy Award nominee Edward Norton. And so it was a real test, quite honestly, Rob, how to weave this together, how to keep it moving, what stories were, there were so many compelling stories, and the elders zipped open their hearts and had extraordinary generosity of spirit to really share this ethos of standing up for what you believe in and fighting the fight on behalf of all of us.
This will premiere around Wisconsin, but not just Wisconsin. What are your hopes for taking what some people might look at as a very local story to a much wider audience?
Well, listen, this is a great counterpoint to Killers of the Flower Moon. Right, where you have a lens of cowboys with murder and mayhem. And then here you have 100 years later, a story about oil and money and water, but told through the lens of the Bad River Band. But that's really a prism for all Native communities that have fought similar challenges. And I think it's a piece of history that many Americans don't understand. And frankly, this battle is one that has been really fought under cover of darkness. And to have light on this issue, it's a really extraordinary act of selflessness, as I said before, that the Bad River Band is fighting on behalf of all Americans. And as a postscript to that, former chairman Mike Wiggins, I heard him speak just about 2 weeks ago, and he said, what we're doing here as a community, we're patriots. It is our civic duty to fight for what he calls the freshwater stronghold of this country.
Mary, before I let you go, how can people see the film? Talk us through the basics.
Oh, we are opening. Thank you, Rob. We're opening in 12 cities and multiplexes. Highly unusual for a documentary, and we're thrilled to have our partners at AMC Theaters. And so if your listeners go to badriverfilm.com, they can hit the dates page. You can go get tickets. We are sharing 50% of the profits of the project with the band. And so if any of your listeners cannot get to the theater, we'd love for them to buy seats early and often.
Mary, thanks a lot for sharing this with us today.
All right, Rob. Thank you for having us.
That's Mary Mazzio, documentary film director, founder and CEO of 50 Eggs, Inc. Her new film, Bad River, comes to theaters, as you just heard, on March 15th. Now we'll dig deeper into the story here with us, Liz Arbuckle, senior councilwoman on the Bad River Tribal Council. Liz, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And Ashley Stone is a former member of the Bad River Tribal Council. Ashley appears in the documentary film Bad River. Ashley, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Liz, can you start us off by talking about your hopes for this documentary, sharing the story of the Bad River Band with the rest of the world?
Absolutely. We're all excited. I'm not in the film. It was just kind of a scheduling thing. It was just a really busy time in my personal life with kids going to college and whatnot. But I'm now on Tribal Council. I wasn't before. And we are on 100% Team Bad River. We are so excited to be, for all the council people are very excited to be a part of this, to be helping teach people about Bad River. Teach people about our culture, our history. We do a lot of wonderful things up here. It's about the people, the land, the animals. You know, I grew up on my reservation. I moved away, went to college, did some things, and now I'm back, and it's an honor to serve for my tribal community 100% and to be able to share why we love this place, why this is important. And this isn't a new thing. We've been fighting these battles for centuries. Really centuries. You can go back as far as the 1850 removal order when they were trying to kick the Ojibwe out of Wisconsin. And our Chief Buffalo and other delegates paddled, walked, took a train, whatever it took to get to Washington, D.C. to preserve our land, to preserve this homeland. And from that became we got the 1854 treaty, which established Bad River and some of the other reservations. So this is just another chapter in how committed we are to preserving, loving, and giving back to the land that preserves and has loved us for centuries.
And Ashley, you and many others, other members of the Bad River Band, share your stories in this documentary. How important is it to you that this is a story being told by you and the fellow members of the Bad River Band?
Yeah. At the time of filming, I was on Tribal Council and was asked to be a part of the documentary. And I really thought it was important to shed light on our rich cultural heritage and the current, you know, contemporary challenges that we face, that the Bad River community faces, and really giving a voice to our story and our struggles, particularly in the face of ongoing environmental and social injustices that we see, you know, repeatedly. And it was great to be a part of this documentary and shed light on that.
And Liz, this story isn't done. We've talked on the show in the past about the ongoing legal battle over this pipeline. We don't need to dig super deep into the back and forth in the courts, but could you talk about what still needs to be resolved in this ongoing saga?
Well, yeah, exactly. It is still definitely an ongoing saga. The federal, we've got a couple of things going on where the federal agreed that with the band that the pipeline is creating a risk to the meander. And of course, that's what a lot of us are very concerned about. We have to preserve that. There's some questions about their trespassing, that they haven't respected tribal sovereignty or our treaty rights. And that is another theme we will see emerge here, is that it's protecting our treaty rights and sovereign rights.
And Ashley, Liz mentioned a few moments ago her love for the community, for the land, for the water there. Can you talk a little bit about that, the love you and others feel for this community you're part of?
Absolutely. I love Bad River. I love Mushkazeebi with all my heart. And I know the community feels the same way. I know the people feel the same way. I know that you don't have to be a tribal member, but you can just be from Bad River and know the power of Lake Superior and really appreciate and take in awe of that. This film really brings that to light.
And Liz, are you going to be going to some of the premieres when the Bad River documentary comes to theaters?
Absolutely. Milwaukee friends, family, and neighbors, please come and see me at Mayfair Mall. I'm going to be doing a welcome address at the theater on Friday for the shows. Secretary Bob Houle will be at Minneapolis. Councilman Dan Wiggins will be in Chicago. Horst Livingston, who is in the film, will be at Madison. So we've got different folks. Like I said, we're Team Bad River. We're very excited. Please come to the movie theaters. There's still tickets available in many of the sites. I'll do an address, and I would love to meet with you, shake your hand, and share with you what I can share with you about Bad River.
And Ashley, as we wrap up, what are you hoping the rest of the world takes away from Bad River?
I really hope that everyone can see how proud and empowering this film is for the community and our story being told, and really amplifying our voices and making sure that our perspective is shared with everyone, with a wider audience. And I feel that it will be something that's shared worldwide.
And I did want to add one thing. Mm-hmm. We're not the most tech savvy tribe on the planet, but we're getting there. And we have just created a new website called defendthebadriver.org, which is a lot about these issues. So please visit that site. That's going to be continuing to be updated. So we'll have more information there. And you can also follow us on Facebook.
Ashley and Liz, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Bye.
That was Liz Arbuckle, Senior Councilwoman on the Bad River Tribal Council, and Ashley Stone, former member of the Bad River Tribal Council. We also heard from Mary Mazzio, documentary filmmaker, been talking about the new documentary film Bad River, coming to theaters starting tonight. You can learn more at badriverfilm.com. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A warm and dry winter has meant wildfire season is starting early in Wisconsin. Recent report from a national government agency says that most areas in Wisconsin have an above normal potential for wildfires in March and April. We're already seeing this in the numbers reported by the Department of Natural Resources and warnings being given out by the DNR. Ron Schneider is a cooperative fire specialist at the Wisconsin DNR. Ron, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yes, thanks for having me on the show.
Ron, I don't think we have any huge fires, but it sounds like we have a lot of fires compared to, say, average years. What are we seeing going on around the state?
Well, we're seeing a very early fire season this year. We've seen a number of fires that started in February, where we usually don't see our fire season start until really after St. Patrick's Day, after the snow melts. So it's already busy for us.
How has our weirdly mild and warm winter helped set the stage for this early wildfire season?
Yes, it was a mild winter. We didn't see the normal snowfall that we usually see, so that really led to two problems. One is our ongoing drought, really in the northern 80% of the state. Another factor is the lack of snow. Usually the snow melts, in southern Wisconsin in February and early March, but the northern part of the state is still under feet of snow. What we're experiencing this year is really the whole state has been snow-free since January. A lot of the state didn't have really much snow cover at all.
Now, that's the conditions. What tends to be the spark? What are the most common causes of a wildfire flaring up in the state?
So 90% or more of our fires are caused by humans or people in one way or another. Our number one cause of wildfires is debris burning. So that can be someone maybe just wants to get rid of their pile of leaves and they start burn a leaf pile. Or brush, or they're burning, cardboard or refuse in a barrel. Debris burning every year is our number one cause of fires.
And so when we've got conditions like this, what are the current warnings from DNR? What are you asking people to do, or I guess mostly to not do?
Yeah, of course. We're asking people to not burn. It's the worst time of year for fires. Most of our fires in Wisconsin are in spring, in March, April, and May. And so if you can put off burning of, your leaves or your brush until the lawns turn green in June and July, when the fire danger is low, that will really lower the chances of any of that burning causing a fire.
And yeah, is this a unique situation where we've got kind of the drier, dead fuel from last year's vegetation, but way earlier than the new, as you said, green stuff comes up and is less of a fire risk?
Yes, exactly. Most of our fires, although we call them forest fires, most of them start in grass and in maybe in cornfields. And if you look at the grass in your yard right now or the fields, they're brown. And they're brown because they're dry. So until your grass turns green, until the fields are plowed and planted, those are all a place for fires to start. And then, of course, the fires from there spread from there with wind and carry into the forest fuels.
And can you talk about the kind of damage wildfires do here in Wisconsin? Obviously, we might think of out west where the big fires are, and that's mostly true. What kind of damage do we see here in the state, though, from a bad wildfire year?
You know, of course, the biggest threat for our wildfires is human life and injury, you know, to the fires. And we've already had injuries, you know, we've experienced that this year already. The second really problem we look at is, you know, the fires that spread and then maybe ignite a building. They may burn, you know, next to a garage, start a garage or a barn or even a house on fire. And then ironically, the last threat for us with forest fires is the forest burning. But that, of course, causes damage too.
Talking to Ron Schneider, cooperative fire specialist at the Wisconsin DNR, about an early start to wildfire season here in Wisconsin. Ron, can you tell us about the work you do working with local fire departments to be prepared to contain these wildfires?
Yes, you know, the DNR is really just one small part of all the forces that are out there to combat these fires. In Wisconsin, we have around 825 fire departments. And whenever there is a fire in Wisconsin, you know, in our DNR fire protection areas, the fire department and the DNR both respond to those fires. They're paged at the same time. And so it's important for us to work together. We work together on the fires. We train together during the winter months or the off season. And then, of course, we have a lot of other partners, too, like nonprofit groups like the Nature Conservancy, our tribal partners like Menominee Tribe. And then our federal partners, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the U.S. Forest Service. So there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle that we work on all year because we need to work together in spring.
Fire departments can be pretty busy even without wildfires going on. How much does a big year for wildfires like this one stretch our resources thin?
Well, I know in DNR we have every available person working this weekend. That's all of our full-time staff. And then we also have a lot of part-time staff that we will bring in on high and very high fire danger days. And then, of course, our fire departments, those that are full-time are staffed. And a lot of our volunteer fire departments in the state are really on their toes on these very bad fire days, ready to respond to fires. So it's a 24/7 system that we have in place to respond to most of the fires.
And what tends to be the case here in Wisconsin? Do we get very many big fires? I can think of a few in the last 20 years or so, or are we dealing with lots of little ones kind of spread out?
This time of year, we have a lot of starts from the fires. In a normal year, we see our largest fires in late April or early May, where we see like the big crown fires in our pine plantations and things like that. That we may see that really in late March, early April, that might be beginning this year, just because of how dry it is. We may see prolonged conditions where we have the potential for large fires until we get some significant rainfall.
For people who want to keep up with fire hazard, whether they want to burn debris at some point this year or they're camping or what have you, all the different reasons we might set something in a hopefully controlled fire, where can we go? What's our one-stop shop to keep track of our local conditions and burn bans and warnings?
The best place is our DNR website. We update the fire danger daily, and that is at dnr.wisconsin.gov, or you can use any search engine and type in Wisconsin DNR. And this time of year, the first page that comes on our website is a link to our fire danger, and we update that every day. And for example, for this weekend, for the Madison area, the southern, I would say 20% of the state is low fire danger because of the rain we had yesterday, mm-hmm. but the rest of the state is on high and very high fire danger.
And so if people are more careful about their fires and pay attention to that, like how much do you think it would cut back on the workload there at the DNR and fire departments around the state when it comes to wildfires?
The best thing people can do now is just not burn. I know we always recommend, like, if you're going to have a campfire or if you're going to burn debris, make sure you get a permit or the proper permit, depending on where you live, and then have a shovel or have water available. But with the really windy days that we are seeing now, a shovel and a bucket of water probably isn't going to be enough. The fires just spread faster than you can physically put them out and contain them. So we really recommend this time of year, just don't burn until we're past this peak fire danger time of year.
And Ron, this time of year, as we wrap up, are you and your colleagues watching the weather closely and hoping for some rain?
Yes, everyone is doing their rain dance. And I know, the Madison area, really the southern counties in the state, got some beneficial rain yesterday, but the rest of the state is dry. We'd like to get rain. We're looking at the long-range forecast, and it looks very dry. And not only is it dry, but it's going to get cold again, which really keeps the grass from turning green. So it's just going to prolong our fire season.
Ron, we'll leave it there. Thanks for bringing us up to date.
Thank you very much.
That's Ron Schneider, cooperative fire specialist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He was with us for a look at why Wisconsin's wildfire season is starting so early this year and what it means looking ahead to spring and summer. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, with dangerous levels of lead found in some applesauce and cinnamon products, we'll dig into the U.S. food safety system, how it works, and when it sometimes falls short. And when someone is looking for mental health care, where do they start? We'll dig into the mental health care system and get some practical advice for making often difficult decisions. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time.